Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Well, indeed, to the ex-conservative radio hour, I am your humble host. My name is Tony Venuti, coming to you every day. Every day, 1 to 3 o'clock. That's my time in Arizona. What is that, Central Time? 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, you're up there along the shorelines of the East Coast, where I'm from, Brockton, Massachusetts, outside of Boston, Mass. It's the culture, stupid. So I'm getting myself all stirred up with my Facebook friends today. Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. It's a very important, you know, to have friends. I mean, how many friends do you have, and what do we call friends anyway? I mean, it becomes a crazy bit of a paradigm, doesn't it? I was born in 1950, a particularly interesting part of the town, if you think of time and space. The when and the where, the why and the what. I've been watching the pop culture, man. I've been watching, I've been watching America's exceptionalism. Go down the toilet! Go down the toilet. What's making us exceptional? Who's we? Well, I should be saying they. But then again, who is they, huh? We always thought the government was out for us because aren't we the government? By the people, of the people, for the people, everything's the people because the people is America. America is the people. But not anymore. Americans of the world, unite. Now it's international, man. We're just a state. Oh, yeah, a state of mind to boot. We're just a state in the New World Order. We're just a small peg on the ground. Matter of fact, we're the bastard child. I think America has become the bastard child of the New World Order. The only thing we're good for, it's the money they can grab from us so we can spread the wealth that we unjustly have taken from. Oh, let me see. What's the first thing we did? We took the land away from the Indians. Yes, we did. All musical chairs of life over 5,000 years. That's all been going on. Everywhere around the world has been conquered or be conquered. Get over it. I don't know. Of course, we did some other things too, didn't we? We enslaved Africans to industrialize America and make it what it is today. But without that help, it would never be the America what it is. So let's just spread the wealth around, right? So I'm getting myself stirred up today, you know. Oh, Tony, you're angry. Yeah, I'm angry. So what? You know, I'm listening to these talkers. I just got up listening a few minutes of Hannity, and he had a caller come on. Said, you know, as usual, the liberals will always say, oh, gee, you really sound angry, as if this is a taught paradigm. This is a taught paradigm on how to reject truth. You want to talk about truth to power, you liberals that came into it in the 60s? How about truth to tyranny? Huh? How about truth to power being only good until you get into power, and then, I mean, now what do you do? Ooh, be careful what you ask for. You're now in charge. You are so adaptable to rejecting authority right down to the, well, beginning with the family, the parents, the whole nine yards. I mean, this is all about, folks, something much bigger than us, and we got to learn to discuss it amongst ourselves, but this is what I fear, and this is why I'm angry. I've watched the left. not knowing it was a dullup. I've been watching the transition, the evolving of a one America, Hey, in the 40s and the 50s and the 30s and the 20s, we were all truly patriots. We loved our country for what it is, including the Constitution and the family principles that held down what makes America exceptional, a moral imperative. You see, when we went over from Europe to America, and then we did better than Europe ever did, including kicking their butt when they tried to tell us it was theirs, after we did the hard work, America was theirs. The left has convinced us that we revolutionaries in the 1700s, the revolution, were just as radicals as the left is now, as they were fighting the Vietnam War in the colleges, while the people really doing the fighting were living, dying, breathing, and blooding to death. Coming back with one less arms, etc., and a whole lot less, perhaps with even their life. So I've been watching this firsthand, okay? But I sort of came, I sort of see this world through the same prism that the international world, who we have been told, seeing us as imperialists. See, that's another invalid premise. Check your premise. That's another invalid premise to go from. That the world has hated us because of our imperialism. Now, let me tell you how the world really started to dislike America. And it all became possible because of technology and the media and news. And so everybody could start to see what everybody was doing. You know, what you don't know won't hurt you. Indeed. And what people do know, and especially when they know unjustly or unclearly or from the sake of program, you're not getting the real information. Let me tell you how I saw it, because I grew up on a very good side of time. See, this is sort of like a parallel. If you think about in the 50s, if you think about the way the impoverished world was to the United States, so was Tony and the neighborhood that he lived in. I'm going to make that again. If you look at the world, because I'm explaining to you, you don't hear me every day. See, that's one of the things I got running against me. You listen to a talk show host, you already know what he's about. I got to set my premise up so that you understand that I've got the cred, baby, to tell you what's going on, because I got no axe to grind, and I've been right amidst the thieves in the den that they hang in. And unless you've been there, you really don't know, and you've been in the trick bag since the 50s. But here's the deal. If you think about the way the world was to the United States in terms of the impoverished world, seeing, with the exception of the industrialized countries, right? With the exception of the industrialized countries of the world in the 50s, most every country was really impoverished beyond anything we'd call poverty, I mean, we're talking downright not being able to eat, starving, dying, that kind of impoverished. Well, here's what happened with the media, in the culture, in the pop culture. You see, it's all about the culture, stupid. They started seeing us as bloated, as glib, as living it up while 80% of the world is starving. And they began to resent it. You could really, not to mention the elitists, the leftists, the Marxists, the people who have been in control per the Communist Manifesto. And that's another story. See, this is all about a big picture paradigm, folks. This isn't about 5 years. This is about doing the Bush thing. You think it's easy watching this stuff and knowing? Ignorance is bliss. So I grew up with the spoiled kids in the political class, children of judges, attorneys, doctors, all of that, on the west side of Brockton, Massachusetts, before it got to be a terrible city. So it used to be the shoe city, capital of the world, a great blue-collar town. Hey, I grew up Democrat. I grew up liberal. Everybody that was, how shall I say, in the working class or in the low class, right? Because we sort of were buying into the idea that people that make more of us were jealous. See, but here's the deal. the way I lived in the neighborhood, I came from a working class family, a struggling family with only a mother that did the real work and my father being bad from a couple of perspectives, but that's another story for another day. But my mother, she's my role model, and she worked in a garment factory, worked three jobs, bringing up three boys, counting her pennies. My first breaking and entering charge was when I broke into the piggy bank to get an ice cream as probably like a 6 or 7 year old, 8 year old home alone from school. And I grew up with these kids in the neighborhood, in the nice part of town, really. I mean, they used to look like mansions to me. You know, executive homes and the like. But on the other side of the street, you know, you got to be careful what you ask for, liberals, okay? Because you just might get it. And in the case of this particular neighborhood, they got it, you know, because their liberalism brought in Brockton's some of its first new low-income housing. Oh, they weren't projects. It was a neighborhood. They were just built some really small homes, like 800 square feet, four rooms, a central heater, two closets, and my mother couldn't wait to get out, and she did about 10 years later. She would later say much to her regret. I remember when she took out a second mortgage in the 50s. She had taken out a second mortgage. My brother got hit by a car. And she needed some money for an attorney, so she took out, and she was so ashamed for taking out a second mortgage. The idea of borrowing money was just new to America, you see. I bet you really didn't know the day when borrowing money was almost like an immoral thing. If you couldn't afford it, i.e. buy it right now, then you don't need it. Oh, if everybody lived by those rules. But capitalism, you see, without virtue is doomed for failure. And Ayn Rand's been saying that kind of thing for a long time, hasn't she? All during this time, we've got weaved in and weaved out the culture. And I saw how the middle class kids were to me, and I was to them. I saw the ridicule that when you're in a lower socioeconomic ladder, this is where the bias comes. This is where the bigotry comes. This is where the racism comes. Small minds. This is where the small minds come from. I grew up with kids. I grew up with ridicule. I had a sense of noesis, though, that I later learned 50 years later of what exactly noesis is, N-O-E-S-I-S. But I was gifted as a young kid with knowing. And I'll tell you what I know. I know that like a second hand, like a minute hand of a clock, we've all been keeping our hands on the current events. Never stepping back to look at the big picture, because you never see things move when you look really close to the minute hand of the clock. You don't even see it move, but all of a sudden it's 15 minutes later and you said, damned if it didn't move. Well, things have been moving in a negative perspective. Positive energy, negative energy, simple as that. For quite a long time. And like a snowball going downhill, natural law, it's exponential growth. And I'm afraid here, I think this snowball that started out as a, you know, something you could throw into a ballooning snowman, if you will. It was so big, the size of a house, doubling up in size, going down the hill at a rapid speed. And if that's the visual that I'm trying to paint, imagine it 60 years later. Now, you've got to remember, it was all about the media. The media really made this go zazunga. Because it's all about communication. It's all about rhetoric. And then it's the delivery system. The church knew about this. Civilized people knew about this. Philosophers knew about this. And people that possessed evil knew how shall I say, educate people in their own image. Playing you some of that music, folks, that brought in the liberalism as popular. You know, this is the whole culture thing was important. in the 50s and the 60s. And the music had so much to do with it. And I'm telling you, how do these things even occur? The breakdown of the family. The breakdown of religion. The breakdown of the church. Those two key things are the only things Marx knew had to be done. That's the only two things. Amazing. Folks, you're listening to Tony Venuti on your ex-conservative radio where I tell you over and over again, it's just the culture, stupid. Amazing. Alcohol for you. Oh, drugs wasn't around then. No. It was it was probably about a year or two away. The year I signed up for the Army, 68, was, I think, the first time I tried pot. Boy, I remember how scary that felt in the car lighting up. And I always wanted to try the new stuff. You know? I wanted to be cool. We all fed into that pop culture paradigm that went along with the intuitive, which was to disregard authority. Funny, though, I didn't see it like that. It had something to do with my mother, I think. She had this thing about loving me. She had this understanding that one of the best traits a human being can have is a sense of respect for even people you disrespect, okay? And a thing called manners. And all it was just the essential driving your force with a positive vibe rather than a negative vibe. It's a simple fact that manners are universal. Respect is universal. It's what I've been seeing for so many years. It's a crying shame. It's the contentious. We're driven between what was, as I was referring to earlier, as one America into two Americas. With instead of being exceptional, we're made to feel guilty for what's making us exceptional, and instead give the power, give the benefit of the doubt, give everything to the exceptions to the rule. The oddballs of society, even when they're not odd, we'll make them odd, says the liberals. We, etc. And as I go through my Facebook groups and sharing some words of wisdom, trying to be profound, trying to be enlightening, entertaining, trying to set an example using logic, reason and deduction. But I got to tell you something. I am angry. And you know what? Angry isn't irrational. Oh, you're just angry. You're just angry. Like, yeah, what about it, pal? You're trying to make it irrelevant? You're trying to make someone's anger the kind of statement that when they're in fact angry, by definition, it's irrelevant. This is a ploy of the left. This is an Alinsky rule. And the bottom line is you have to have the power of certainty and the understanding to allow yourself to know that to be angry is quite rational. Not always. Not always. You know, when your anger isn't rational, it's psychotic. I don't know about that per se, because I'm not the academic. I don't intend to be, but that's my raw thought, you know. After all, that's what I'm doing here. Just a free stream of consciousness, gang. But what is it that we're now a divided country? If it isn't except the fact that it's us and them, it's us who believe that indeed we're an exceptional country. That the power has been given to us by an authority greater than anybody on this earth. And we are the keeper of that power that's been given to us by an authority greater than this earth. That we're to be held accountable. That without redemption, or, in fact, are you them that think, no, you see, you guys got it wrong, man. You know, the Constitution notwithstanding, it has evolved because things change. You say change, and if you don't think our founding fathers knew they would change, thus, they put in some perimeters, they put in some boundaries, they put in some barriers, they put in some guidelines to help us see the way. And have tools in place that would withhold against the natural laws and the forces that go against the good that comes from a paradigm such as we the people are. You got to remember, folks, when we talk about the government being bad, we are the government. So until we take ownership, we got a problem, right? We got a problem. Anyway, you're listening to Tony Venuti with the Ex-Conservative Radio. A few things going on today that I've been posting on Facebook is this business about the EPA official. It's almost like this Amarandas. This is about 2 years ago, but it's just now coming to light. Then, in fact, the EPA official translated the use of crucifying companies, much like the Romans did when they conquered. They crucified five people when they'd go into a town, and everybody knew right off the bat. And this comes from Forbes, confirming what many in the industry long suspected. A video surfaced Wednesday in which Al Amandaris, an official at the Environmental Protection Agency, promotes the idea of crucifying oil companies. This man heads up the EPA's Region 6 office, which is based in Dallas, and is responsible for the oversight of Texas and surrounding areas. In a talk to colleagues about the methods of EPA enforcement, Amandaris can be seen saying, "The Romans used to conquer little villages in the Mediterranean. They'd go into a little Turkish town somewhere. They'd find the first five guys they saw, and they would crucify them. And then, you know, that town was really easy to manage for the next few years." And not only has Amandaris talked about crucifying oil companies, he's tried to do it. In 2010, his office targeted the Range Resources, a Fort Worth-based driller that was among the first to discover the potential of the shale gas field off of Pennsylvania, the Marcellus, the biggest gas field in America and one of the biggest in the world. Amandaris' office declared an emergency order that Range's drilling activity had contaminated groundwater in Parker County. Amandaris' office insisted that Range hydraulic fracking activity had caused the pollution and ordered Range to remediate the water. The EPA's case against Range was catnip for the environmental fractivists who insist with religious zealotry that fracking is evil. Well, this video that was shot around the same time he was preparing this action against Range, here's the highlights of what he said. "The Romans used to conquer little villages in the Mediterranean. They'd go into the little Turkish town somewhere. They'd find the first five guys they saw, and they'd crucify them. And then, you know what? The town was really easy to manage for the next 2 years. And so you make examples out of people who are in the case not compliant with the law. You find people who are not compliant with the law, and you hit them as hard as you can, and you make examples out of them. And there is a deterrent effect there. And companies that are smart see that. They don't want to play that game, and they decide at the point that it's time to clean up. And that won't happen unless you have somebody out there making examples of people. So you go out, you look at an industry, you find people violating the law, you go aggressively after them, and we do pretty much the same effective enforcement rules. Compliance gets very high, very quickly, very quickly. Folks, listen to this. Isn't this why we see what's happening in seemingly acquiescent corporations that seem to have knuckled in? We see it in every industry because they're afraid of fighting the federal government in court. Because the federal government, guess what, is using our money against ourselves. We are the corporation. Not necessarily Wall Street per se, but we are the workers. We are the people that make it happen. Remember, government takes from those that make. Government takes from those that make. Government doesn't take from those that take. They'd be fighting amongst themselves. No, government takes money against those that make it. They take it. People make it, the government takes it. You could play sandlot basketball, make it, take it, you know? You could keep shooting, play half court.
So if you score the basket, you can keep control of the ball. Make it, take it.
Should be make it, take it for yourself. You make it, you take it for yourself. You don't make it and have the government take it for themselves. And then when we're not represented fairly and there's corruption, never mind crony politics, but out and out evil, what, you don't get it? Warp says, hey, we can't be exceptional with 51% of the people on the same form of entitlement program.
That's the problem. That's the, I mean, that's really critical mass.
That's natural law. That simply says exactly the point you're making. Everything being equal, we are the Titanic headed right into the iceberg. And yeah, we've just been so good at what we've been doing. We're just so big, we don't even know how to manage what we got. But we always want more. It's unfortunate. And it's disheartening to see how we fight amongst ourselves in a negative way to where we're contagious with one another, because it's really about the two worlds here, not one like in the 50s and the 60s. But the left has been effectively able to manage the creation of the second. And that's why they talk about the Democrats now being so far left, but they're communists, man. Let's get into, let's get to this conversation. You know we're going to have it eventually. You know some of this stuff is going to have to hit the fan, but we have to say, what are we afraid to say that we know what they're doing? That they sort of have to, they, who are they, Tony? Gosh, conservatives, Republicans, the other side, not Democrat. Oh, my God, do we need a third party or what? I really do think we do need a third party. When you think about Communist Manifesto item number 15, take control of one or both of the political parties, well, they have. They have in effect, because isn't the establishment GOP, quote-unquote, by definition of being scared to death of the likes of Rush Limbaugh, conservatism, the Tea Party, et cetera, isn't that by definition showing you who the GOP are? Look it. Think about Daddy being not the liberal left media, Marxists, the ones that we know, the Democrats, the network news. Let us not think that for, let us see, let's make like that's one child. And the other child is like Fox News and the establishment GOP. That's like two different children. They're both bad. But you've got Daddy here. You've got Daddy up on top that says, it isn't about how one child plays or how the other child plays. It's how I play them both against that conservatism. Let's make it radical. And that's what they've effectively done. And besides, see, you've got two real problems here that almost square against each other. You've got, like Wolf says, about 50% of the people that are in need. Oh, hey, don't you need something? Oh, I'm going to make you indebted to me, baby, just like those college students, just like those towns and cities that are depending on grants and money to continue programs that uplift everybody. Then 2 years later, you're left holding the bag or the loan or the interest. Oh, I'm going to do you really? Oh, you're doing me no favors with friends like that. Who needs enemies? I'm having a brain fart. But it's essentially these two paradigms. And now we're even afraid to talk about it. It's almost like we're being pickpocketed. Instead of somebody coming up from behind us and putting their hands in our pockets, they're actually shaking our hand. And as they hold our hand, they bring us a little closer to them. They give us a nice little hug and put their hand right in our back pocket, our butt, and go into our, and they pickpocket us while they're shaking our hand. And as we're looking them in the eye, we're saying, good day, how's your day? Oh, fine, and you? Meanwhile, they're pickpocketing us. Okay, now, this is what it's like. This is how crazy it is. It's like we now know they're pickpocketing us, but we don't want to say, hey, stop that right now. You're pickpocketing us. No, we're afraid they'll beat us up. So we try to, knowing that they're doing it, we try to get them to stop it by playing nice instead of getting them to stop it by being, hey, get out of here, I'm about to shoot you in the head. I mean, that's what's going on. We can't even talk it. What are we, afraid? Yeah, we're afraid. White people are afraid of black people. That's what it's come down to. That's what this is all about. Because it's going to have to get to that, isn't it? But see, we can talk bravely about it because there's good people and there's bad people. There's good white people and there's good black people. There's bad white people and there's bad black people. Let's not be afraid. Chumps. Saps. Been watching this. Since 1950, man, your free stream of consciousness, your eyewitness to the pop culture taking us down. And from the eyes of a child, from somebody born and talented with an understanding of common sense, logic, virtue, and whatever it took for me to understand things that nobody seemed to get, even myself was scratching my head. I'm still naive to this day. How in that world did we get like this? I know exactly how. I've been watching it. Tony, are you angry? Yeah, I'm a little bit, just a little bit. Just a little bit. You know why? Because it's all I got, man. It's all I got, my country. I am my country. When people ask who you are, when you need to remind your child who they are, remind them that when somebody says, who do you think you are, say, I am my country. I am my country. That's what I used to think as a kid. I mean, how did I think like this? I don't know. But I knew it was because I was naked of things. I wasn't in possession of very little, at least to my way of thinking. Because, again, I grew up with those spoiled kids on the other side of the street, the trust fund babies, the very liberals, okay? Much like the world seeing the rest of the world, seeing the America as the glutton, I saw those kids as the glutton. Always wanting, buy me, give me, I need, but yet they were always dissatisfied, always unhappy, and always getting it the easy way. Oh, and I wanted it that way. I was jealous. I was envious. Oh, my mother, what a hard time she'd have. The world doesn't owe you a living. You know, I think I did 30 minutes on that the other day. So this experiences that I bring to you is like first hand, man, and I know what's going down because here's the deal. In the final analysis, reverse engineering, the thought that I have today through the backwards in time all the way back, it's like, you know, when the son that you now discover is a drug addict and you start to put all the dots together realizing that all those little strange things, now you know what that all meant. Now, oh, I see. Oh, how come I didn't see it when I saw it? Because you're human, okay? Because you're human, it's never too late to get it. It's never too late to get it. I'd rather go down kicking than be stupid and dead. I don't want to be stupid and dead. I know, look, ignorance is bliss, good for you. Good for you. Is that where you want to be? Yeah. That's what that 50% entitlement is at risk. People are having being stupid because they take the shortest line, you know, shortest point, shortest, you know what I'm saying? It's natural law. It's human nature. It's the 80-20 rule, which explains everything. Another Italian that explained a lot that never, I mean, if I ask, if I went into, like, some, you know, general area in the center of town, a mall, and I asked 100 people what the 80-20 rule is, very few would know it. And yet it's so commonly known. The Pareto's principle. And it was developed in the 1800s to explain the discrepancy with those that have and those that have not. It explains it. You got the majority of the people doing hardly any work most of the time in any arena. You can go into any arena, a high-end arena, a low-end arena,
in any industry, in any neighborhood, in any community, and you'll find that the producers, the people who are the hustlers in the crowd, the people who have ambition, the people who want to, who don't see work as something that's bad, or work as something you get away with. I mean, you can go into your own personal lives. You know, there's you look at anything, and you can say, oh, yeah, that, yeah, in a classroom there's always three or four, and these were the, you know who the stars are. But there's this paradigm that says that we're supposed to have more concern for those that don't than those that do. That's what this is about. This is about the left that has been able to get power by aligning themselves with the numbers because they knew of the 80-20 rule. And they use it against us by enabling those people that they know by numbers can be made to feel really angry at those performers, those greedy, ambitious performers that dare make what some call a profit. Wow! Hey, look, you might be a liberal if you think the law of supply and demand means if you demand that the government should supply it. I understand you just might be a liberal. The things that are going on, people say, what's happening here? How come is this happening? The question is, if I wanted America to fail, to follow, not lead, to suffer, not prosper, to despair, not drink, I'd start with energy. I'd cut off America's supply of cheap, abundant energy. I wouldn't take it by force. So I'd make Americans feel guilty about using the energy that heats their homes, fuels their cars, runs their businesses, and powers their economy. I'd make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. I'd empower unelected bureaucrats to call it out of America's most abundant source of energy. After banning its use in America, I'd make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. See, I wanted America to fail. I used their schools to teach one generation of Americans with their factories and their farms, both of them in my education. And I muster a straight face so I could teach the next generation that their cost was warmth. When it's cold out, it's going to break the day. I didn't find that America stayed in fact run wind power and wishes. I teach children how to ignore the abundance of condemning lobbying, buying, and farming, buying roofs over their heads, eating in their homes, and food on the table. I would never teach children that the free market is the only force in human history. God bless the poor. I wish to build life, create life, and prosperity. And then I demonize prosperity and suffering, but they will not do it, but they will never end it. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations on the government and the world. It'd be so complicated that only bureaucrats would respond to it for statements. At least small businesses with big ideas would stand the chance. Then I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earthers those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the role of the supply and demand, I didn't send the French media to drown them out. If I wanted America to stay, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracies to use this capital to bully Americans out of their dreams and their progress. I had federal agents to raid the tar factories for using the farmers like a boy. I forced homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I invent homes. I devise efficient products like carbon credits and trade them in imaginary markets. I can get people that this would create jobs and be good for the economy. If I wanted America to fail, for every concern I invent a crisis, and for every crisis I invent a quote, like shutting down entire industries and killing tens of thousands of jobs, just make them safe and spot out. And when everyone learns the stunning irony that they all were victims of their larger cuts and not me,
started on there, I would have failed. I'd make it easier to stop commerce and start it, easier to kill jobs to create, more fashionable to invent success than succeed. When industry thinks of great jobs, I follow along to stop them, and then I make taxpayers pay for my lawyers. If I wanted America to fail, I would transform the environmental agenda from a document of conservation to an economic suicide. I would concede entire industries to our economic rivals by imposing regulations that cost trillions. I would celebrate those who preach environmental austerity and public responsibility to out of place violence. I do believe America is a durable, has a friend, forget that effective cause. If I wanted America to fail, I would pray for the goodness, empathy, of ordinary America. I would only need to convince that all of them is for the greater good. If I wanted America to fail, I wouldn't change a thing.
If I wanted America to fail, what if I wanted it to succeed? Maybe if I wanted it to succeed, we'd just be drilling, you think? I think somebody ought to do something like that, research that. If we want America to succeed, you're listening to Tony Venuti, folks, with your ex-conservative radio hour from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. Playing the music that legitimized liberalism by all of us that simply didn't know better, if you can imagine such a thing. From Tucson, Arizona, I'll be right back playing you one of my favorites.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety or surprise, the end, I'll never look into your eyes. Can you picture what will be? So
be right back, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio. Are you ready for this? I just did. I think, man, about 10 minutes. Didn't I just do about 10 minutes? Was I silent for that long? 10 minutes, 15 minutes? I just had the best 10 or 15 minutes lately. And damned if I didn't turn on the control. Oh, well. Now, what I've learned from doing this quasi-semi-now and again, which is more than I like to admit, because how can you not remember just to turn that thing back on, you know? Not to try to repeat it, not to try to go back into my head and figure out what I said, because that'll never happen. But let me play a song. I'll come right back. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong,
conservatives don't have a whole lot good to say about the black community.
What would there be to brag about? The extreme numbers in crime, sex, unwanted birth, the whole nine yards, 60-70% of the population without a father. Give me a break. You must be a liberal, man. You see, conservatism is about truth, and black conservatives don't really have a whole lot to say about good the black community. What I wish they would do is talk about the bad that exists, but no, they get ridiculed. They shut up. They're silenced all too often, but they're coming in, you know. They're coming in the Tea Party. They're proud Americans, baby. My black brother, it doesn't matter what color you are. Let's get off of this color thing, okay? 3 years in the Army, 15 years in and out of a dozen penitentiaries. I'd say I'm pretty familiar with the black community. We can get contagious with each other, can't we? I mean, we can sort of get like... contentious with each other? Isn't that the way we've been trained? The two Americas, the black America and the white America? The communist America and the capitalist America? Isn't that what we're really fighting for now? Because after the 50s into the 60s, heavy into the civil rights movement, it wasn't a matter of judge me for the character, not for my color, as Martin Luther King said. Judge me not by the color of my skin, but the content of my character. You think Al Sharpton believes in that? You think Reggie Jackson believes in that? Boy, could you imagine if Reggie Jackson was ever elected president? See, that wasn't his time. They needed a few more years to make our collective white guilt seek in our memories. It lapsed. I'm just sickened, folks, by the negative energy that seems to be everywhere. It seems to be everywhere. We're fed up with the media. Why don't we waterboard the media till they tell us the truth, huh? How can we waterboard the media? It would be interesting. You have to understand that. But the media, half the reason they don't tell us what they tell us is because they're lazy. And they're told. But do you think these kids that are on these broadcast stations, that are, the Shepherd and Martha and all these people, they're almost, they're not even older than 40 years old. They're in their 30s. And they're making millions of dollars. Why is that? Why do they command such a high figure? Of course, nobody ever talks about the money they make when they talk about the evil capitalists and the money they make. But why is it that these journalists are paid a ton of money? Is it maybe so they'll do what they told? Is it maybe so that they'll do what they told? I think so. O'Reilly, O'Reilly, in a discussion on the viral nature of the news coverage, he blames both the right and the left equally. His guest claims that the left owns pop culture, Hollywood, TV, of course, and that's how I feel. And of course, O'Reilly says, oh, that's not true. Man, I like to slap him up the side of his head. I swear, I really, see, here's the thing, again, when you've got two children, the left and the not-so-left, because that's all Fox is, you get the left and not-so-left, and every now and again they'll dabble to the right so that they further fool us. But they're not in control of the agenda. Daddy is. The daddy of those two children are the ones controlling the agenda for a bigger picture play. And the kids never know that daddy's playing them. Daddy, the people that own the networks, the people that are involved in this stuff, these elites,
these power mongers, these people who we know exist but don't know we don't know they exist and all that kind of stuff. This whole conspiracy thing, I mean, are we so afraid we can't even call it like it is? This should be a post-America versus a pre-America. Anyway. Energy, huh? Energy is sort of like a bunch of communists, something, right? We've got Salazar talking about $9 a gallon. Who could know if that's possible? Well, we better think years to know if that's possible. Who's to know? The global economy, how can we know? See, now we're triangulating the global economy. Every reason now, when they need an intangible that you can't prove one way or the other that just makes a good argument, they're going to use the false paradigm of the global economy. Sort of like that same way they use anonymous. Anonymous sources say, well, you can make up anything, can't you? An anonymous source says. So you think we're going to trust you? You think we're going to trust you, media, after what we now know? We know. Oh, an email came in and said this. Yeah, one that you selected that you would have wrote yourself, but because somebody else wrote it, you can repeat it and not have to take responsibility. Oh, I didn't say it. This email said, you chose to air it. When you choose to air something, when you publish something, you ought to be man enough. You ought to be man enough to own up on it, to say, yeah, I did it. Yeah, it may not be my words, but since I chose to get it out there, I'm essentially taking responsibility. But you won't see the media do that. You won't hear the argument. It's a very valid argument. I'd love to make that argument any day in the week because it's simply respect, common sense, and human decency. You can't. That's why you don't have hearsay evidence in a court of law. All you have to do is see how the rules of rhetoric on the networks would parallel in politics as well, and would parallel with those of a hearing in a court of law, because you know, as we know, we have certain rules in place there that allow, or don't allow hearsay evidence. If we don't allow it in a court of law, why should we allow it in the court of public opinion? If we don't allow, ooh, I like that one, Tony. If we don't allow hearsay in a court of law, why do we allow hearsay in a court of public opinion? I don't know either. I'll be right back.
Hello, shout out to my Facebook friends, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radar, wishing everybody in my little Facebook clan a happy birthday. Harvard Miller, happy birthday. Cassie McSashern, happy birthday. Hey, David. David Walker, 58 years old, happy birthday in Facebook land. Harvard Miller, happy birthday, pal. Marilyn Mead Slintz, happy birthday. And Mark Yelwitz, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. All right, enough of that play. Enough of that play action pass. Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio folks from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's a culture, stupid. It certainly is. It's not the economy. It's our moral imperative. I don't care how much money we have if you're a jerk, if you're teaching your children wrong, if you're perverted, if you don't understand positive energy and negative energy, if you don't understand harmony in the universe, if you're a taker and not a giver. I don't care. What good is it for America? What good is it for the world? What good is it for the perpetuation of the species that are to carry on? Because that's our only duty. You know, what's it all about, Alfie? Our only duty is to survive and to self-perpetuate. We do that through having babies and having what civilized people have learned is the best way to do that. In an organized population. I think that's what you would call a civilization, right? An organized population. It's a family. And it just follows the dictates of natural law. One positive, one negative, one neutron, you know, one proton, one electron. Alpha, Omega. Better be careful here. I'm using some premises that I'm not all that versed in. And I can get myself caught up in the trick bag with that one. But boy, can't we all just get along? The manner to which we all speak to one another has really diminished manners, respect. Let me tell you how I feel about respect. It comes first with self-respect. You can never, never be able to respect anybody if you don't respect yourself. That's lesson number one. And so much has to do with that, with the self-image. Who are you? Who are you? Hey, I wasn't anybody in particular when I was a kid, but I was me. I am my country. I knew that I was me. Everything that is part of me, my character, my abilities, my desires, my hopes, my dreams. I am me. This business about, well, you're a professional or you're a tradesman. Now, the kind of person you are is the kind of attorney you are. The kind of person you are is the kind of used car salesman you are. The kind of person you are is the kind of politician you are. And when we all have it good, when we have all those material things and no moral perspective to be able to appreciate what you really have and where it came from. What was Obama villainizing Romney for having a silver spoon in his mouth? Wasn't he just now villainizing his daughter then? What's he going to say in 20 years from now when somebody trying to have a legitimate argument say, oh, well, gee, you know, Miss Obama, you were just spoiled. I mean, your father was president. Of course you got this. Of course you got that. Didn't you just get permission for the world, for the universe to do that? Man, give me a break. And you know, these clowns, and I'm talking about, I shouldn't say it. I don't mean to be negative like that would rob me bum, because that's where I was going. When Romney and others like him, they get defensive. They try to explain. I say, yeah, so what? You're going to take away my father's success as an example that my success, isn't that part of the American dream? Didn't you just say that we're supposed to have a better life for each subsequent generation ahead of us? So that's what my father did, and now you're villainizing him? I would have threw it right back on their butts. These people don't know how to street fight, man. They just don't. They don't know how to mix it up. They don't. They're so afraid for looking rough. Man, you better be rough. You better be rough. Oh, this group, Simply Politics, with this string, over 200 responses, 300 responses. Why is it so difficult for black conservatives to say something? Isaac Hunter, I don't know what color you are, nor do I care, but I do care about your BS post. You are full of it. Get life and face reality and get your butt off the perch of superiority that is stuck in your crack. Isaac, you know, see, that's what I'm talking about, baby. Gruffin K, government pros and black tit suckers who say, you know, I can't even read this stuff, folks. It's so viral. Just so viral. Steve again saying to Isaac Hunter, I'm telling you, man, these black conservatives have brought the racist line all the way. Talk about dupes. And watch this, Michael Harris is not going to answer my question because all black conservatives repeat what the Mazda put in their pointed little heads. Meanwhile, he's the white guy. Oh, God, I'm telling you, it's something else. So what's important for the black population to know is that the world really doesn't owe you a living, and you've been convinced that it does. You've been convinced that you've been owed because of a false paradigm that slavery 10 generations ago, and I'm going to ask you pointed, can you name one ancestor that was a slave of yours? And by the way, while we're at it, do you have any white in your background? Because I don't see your skin as being absolutely black like I would in Africa. Huh? I mean, let's just throw it back at him, folks. It's going to be a little rough and dirty. I've been experiencing racism all of my life. If I was black, I don't think I'd have half the difficulty I've had with my business. I would have floated. I could have got free money. People would have done business with me. People would have been afraid to say no. If only I had been black, I would have been a success. If only had I been black. Now, I'm saying that with a tongue-in-cheek, and I must say to my black conservative brethren, or black people, or any people of goodness, I apologize to having offended you if I did, but get over it. I'm speaking truth here. This ain't about color. I'm tired of all this crap. This ain't about color. I'm tired of all this crap. Get over it. It's about the actions of people who are of color, from who the Americans other than color have been afraid to even talk about because we've been villainized. And we're a bunch of chumps and saps because we buy into the notion that, no, we really have had it pretty good and they haven't had it so bad, but we ought to be... Isn't it like that's what it is? I'll be right back.
We had white horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Ooh, what a lucky man. White lace
and feathers they made of his bed, a gold covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
Each week I bring to you some of the cause and effects that are creating the political environment of unrest in Tucson, Arizona. And one of those topics is the La Raza program. The La Raza program, not, you know, we don't own it in Arizona. There's over 300 chapters of La Raza. As a matter of fact, just last month, President Obama spoke to the National La Raza Group, I believe, in Washington. And La Raza, if you didn't know, folks, in one simple word, means the race. It means the race. La Raza seems to think they've got it going on. They seem to think that they need to take America back. Well, I'm bringing Arizona Laura back with me, as we do each and every Wednesday. Good morning, Laura. How are you? Let me see.
Tony, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you very much. Well, as I've been talking about La Raza, and I enjoy these conversations very much, where do you come across all this material that you read from week to week with us?
I got them from the horse's mouth. They didn't want to give them to us. They didn't want to cooperate. They didn't cooperate, actually. But we finally persisted and threatened lawsuits and went to the attorney general. And actually, we went to the superintendent of all Arizona schools a few years. And he was kind enough to help us. And they had to bring some of the books down, and we couldn't believe what we found in those books. So we sent away for more. We wanted to know lists. We got lists of what they use in Rasa studies. In Rasa studies, what it does is it they have classes that substitute for American history.
Yeah.
And they call it From Mexican Perspectives. This La Raza movement is not a Hispanic movement. This is, I want to make this clear, this is only a Mexican movement because Mexico is the only country that wants to take over the Southwest, and now they want to take over the whole United States, not just the South. Because they've got so many millions. There's not 11 million. There's between 40 and 60 million. I got this from good sources, of illegal aliens. Most of them are from Mexico. Because Mexico doesn't. Mexico is very, very, they're one of the worst human rights violators in the world. They have more complaints about the way they treat their illegal aliens. They don't want them coming up here. They want Mexicans coming up here so they can take back, they can steal what we've got, what we've worked for all these years, and they think they have a right to it. They tell, even though they only owned the Southwest for 24 years, the least of everybody, and I can't stress that enough. And they were never up here. Everything that they say is Aztlan, which is this mythical area of a few states. It was all based on myths, all on legends. They even admitted in their books, their writers will even admit it, it's based on myths. One writer says myth is reality. No, myth is not reality. Myth is myth.
Yeah, well, you know, Bill O'Reilly will tell everybody that perception is reality. And I tell people, if you think perception is reality, then you're living an illusion. And all you're doing is, we understand when people say perception is reality. We understand, at least I do, and it usually typically refers to someone who, because they're stupid and can't use logic, reason, and deduction, will perceive something that is in fact not true and treat it like that's true. But that doesn't make it true. I don't care if 99% of everybody's stupid and they perceive it as something else, the wrong answer. Don't tell me that's the truth because more people perceive it.
Exactly. I mean, you have people who are, I mean, they're mentally disturbed and there's something, you know, wrong with them, and they see things completely different, things that don't exist. And I mean, it can become, your perception can become reality if you fool enough people. And that's what they're trying to do.
But it's not the reality. That's the key.
But it's not reality, right. Exactly. But the Mexicans would like to make it reality, and so they lie to their children, and they tell their children they own this land for 40,000. They never owned this land for 40,000 years. American Indians were here for thousands of years. There were people even before American Indians, but American Indians were here for thousands, but they're completely different races. And
well, you know,
many,
the best description I have for myths are those stories that reach far back into human consciousness and thought. And they present through symbol and metaphor and intuitive understanding. And what that further infers is that without any thinking, you come to conclusions. And it's all because of these myths that are implanted in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hard to defeat.
Manipulating minds. A lot of what the Rasa is doing is manipulating our words, manipulating Americans' words to manipulate Americans' minds. Mm-hmm. We are so far away from, except unless your parents, like my parents,
like that.
Are immigrants.
Hey, I like that statement right there, manipulating words to manipulate minds.
Exactly. That's why they call illegal aliens immigrants. They're not immigrants. Immigrants are people who get online and wait for years. They follow the laws. Illegal aliens are illegal aliens. They're people who come by breaking our laws. But you see, they try to manipulate everybody. Years ago, I wrote in one of our local newspapers, this Mexican lady had written an article, and she said something about, you know, how illegal aliens are just coming for jobs, and they're just all good people. And I wrote back and said, look, I have a newsletter. I get hundreds of articles a night on the child molestation among illegal aliens, the murder, I mean, they're killing more Americans than all the wars that we have right now going on, illegal aliens kill more Americans every year than what than the Americans who die in our wars. That's how bad it is. And Steve King, who's a senator from Iowa, he approximated 25 Americans a day die by the hands of illegal aliens, 13 through DUIs.
Are you kidding?
And 12 through, yeah, no, this is true, and 12 through, this is an approximation, of course, 12 through homicide. So, I mean, it's just horrific what's going on. I mean, they're destroying the country, literally. And in every state, there's not a state that is not suffering from these people. And there's so many, I worked with criminals for many years as a paralegal, and you see them coming across, and you see, I mean, these are tons of them. They say the statistics think at least 20% of all the illegals sneaking through a day, and that's thousands of illegals. They've been doing this for years, thousands a day, were violent criminals in their own country before ever coming here. That's how much we – and they I forget, was it 12 or 20? They think child molesters alone come across a day. That's why there's so much of it. And Mexico has an especially bad problem with child molestation. People don't even report it a lot of the time. Because it's so frequent, and molesting little girls and women, and, I mean, you know, raping women, it's just not considered a big deal. A lot of the – I was reading some articles by Dave Gibson, and he was saying things like, you know, a lot of the perpetrators of rapes here of women from Mexico, when the perpetrators are from Mexico, they will say to the judge, I didn't know I was doing anything wrong, because in Mexico they don't get prosecuted. You know, and it's like, and to us, that's very, very strange. But we're dealing with foreign cultures. I've lived in 7 countries, and, I mean, you're dealing with different cultures. Different cultures have different ways of thinking. But Western, I mean, civilization and Europe and things like that, they're more akin to the way we think. But if you go down to a lot of different countries, they have such different ways of thinking that we can't understand. We just can't fathom.
But why do we even go there with that concern? I mean, because the bottom line is, it's just like us here who may understand the laws, but if they don't know the laws in existence, and the old saying goes, ignorance of the law is no excuse. We've always been held to that standard, and I don't think ignorance to the law is any different from anybody, regardless of their culture or not. And I think with these progressive judges in the past 50 years of feel good, warm, fuzzy, the whole nine yards, I think your perspective, or what you're articulating anyway, is probably very common in terms of, oh, these people, they don't understand, so now they're doing X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z is a little different for them than for an American who, because they understand the laws, might be treated a little differently. So even when we lose more, and when we don't win at all.
Right,
I mean,
and
it's even worse.
Like
it's like we're the enemy for having things, we're the enemy for succeeding. Again, performance-based. You don't perform, you made your bed, sleep in it.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, you're coming to our country, so you have to observe our laws. But what's happening, I've interpreted for thousands and thousands of Hispanics. I always loved Spanish. I still love the language. I love most of the people I meet. But what I couldn't get over is that I noticed that when I would interpret for Mexicans, so many, not all of them, because there's a lot of good ones who come here because they want to get away from that country. They want to get away from
it.
You know, they have Roman law. They've just recently changed it, but they still have that mentality of Roman law that you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent and things like that. But the attitude I would get, and this is the biggest problem, is their attitude, is that they say, you don't need laws. We have laws in Mexico. We don't follow them. What do you need laws for? And you know, it was the first one to tell me that. We had a fellow who smashed the car into a young 20-year-old girl who goes to the university here, or used to go to the university here. 20 years old, she's now paralyzed from neck down. Do you think he had any remorse? 48-year-old national from Mexico, here illegally, telling us, and he is very proud, I have no insurance, I have no license, I have no nothing. I mean, as far as driving, what do you need what do you need that for? We said to him, she was there she had the right of way, and he smashed into her car. He says, I was there first. What do you mean right of way? She said, yes, but she had the law. He said, you don't need law. I come from Mexico. We don't follow laws. He had absolutely no remorse. I mean, he smashed her car, and she is now paralyzed from neck down. And this guy will just go out again and drive some more. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a completely different mentality. They're not coming here because they love my parents came here because they loved our freedoms, because they believe
sure.
in what America stands for. These people come, tons of them come, because if they cared for what the country stands for and that we're a nation of laws, they would follow the laws to come here. But they come here because they don't care about our laws. All they care about is money and what they can take from us. And they don't care if it's fair
and we've
or if
had
it's
people
stealing.
In place. We've had people in place. We've had the media in place to display to the world, on one hand, in a celebratory manner, the way our culture exists, the way we consume abundanza, the way we waste, et cetera, et cetera. And they do that just because that's their promotion of our pop culture. Nothing withstanding in terms of evil. No, that comes when they purposefully create a dialogue or a rhetoric that shows to the world just how mean we are, how bad we are, how because of our religion, because of our willingness to go to war. And so now we have our own people on the inside telling the rest of the world, I mean, this is how it's happening, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 50 or 60 years?
Oh, yeah. And we teach the kids that we are a very, very special country. When I was young, I was also into this, America's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, we have had some bad things in our culture. The blacks should have had their civil rights right along, you know. Every country, there's always prejudice against new immigrants and stuff. But what we're not talking about is immigrants. We're talking about illegal aliens who are here illegally, who don't have rights because they shouldn't have rights because they spat on our laws. You know what I mean? But every country has things that, you know, have gone wrong. But what we're based on is wonderful. I've lived in 7 countries, and those are the countries I've lived in over 3 months each. And I came back loving this country because what I saw in other countries, you can't compare. This is really the best country in the world. That's why the whole world comes here.
We have a heart. We have a heart.
We do. We have more compassion, probably more compassion than we even should have, because we have compassion for people
mm-hmm.
who want to kill us.
And
who
see,
want to
it's our heart.
Our country.
It's our heart that's going to get the best of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we not only have compassion, but we also are lazy in confronting evil. Because we don't want to believe it exists, because then at the same token, we're going to have to acknowledge that we now have to live up to certain standards and mores. And I don't want to be criticized out loud in the public. Maybe I just better toe the line. So that sort of goodness sort of bites us both ways. Do you see that at all?
Oh, yeah. And you have to. You can have compassion, and compassion is a good thing, but you have to use your brain also. You both sides, you can't just, I mean, we feel sorry for everybody. Well, feel sorry is okay as long as they're not tearing your country down and taking the food out of your kids' mouth and taking your kids' education away. But when it gets to the point of ridiculousness, that's, you have to stop, and you got to use your head.
Imagine having a guest in your house that you're letting stay for a couple weeks, they're visiting or whatever, and they're just a guest, and, you know, they're not contributing anything, they're your guest. Well, all of a sudden you realize the guest isn't just a guest. He's, in fact, a thief. And now that you know he's a thief, what do? Nothing. You do nothing. You know now that he's a thief. He's in your house. You haven't asked him to go. And you haven't confronted him on the fact that you know he's a thief, and there's going to have to be some retribution here, one way or the other, least of which, get the hell out of Dodge.
Oh, I've heard another one. Where somebody sneaks into you have a big house, and they sneak into the back of it. And while you're living in the front, they're living in the back, and they're using this, and they're using your electricity and your gas, and they're when you're not looking, they're taking the food out of your refrigerator. But then they start cleaning your toilets, and then you say, hey, what are you doing in my house? Get out. They say, well, wait a minute, I've been cleaning your toilets for years. You got to let me stay now. Now you got to let me stay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
eventually they're going to say, well, this is my house. You get out, and I'll stay in here. Then what are you going to do? You know, then there's so many of them. By that time, you know, Cal Thomas wrote an article, I remember, a while back, and he even said that. When will this stop? How many illegals will, before they outnumber us, you know? And we wrote a book, me and I and Dave Gibson, and it's called Replacing Americans. And I honestly, honestly believe that's what they're doing.
Laura, when I was as young as under 10 years old, I remember going to the movie for 25 cents, and my father would tell me, oh, in my day, we would go to the movie for
a
nickel and still have some popcorn and some money left over.
I remember
that. I realized the exponential growth of numbers early on.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think about a penny piece of bubble gum being a dollar. I used to, you know, extrapolate that kind of thinking out with basic math skills. I just always had the common sense thinking of exponential growth. A snowball going downhill doubles up in size, doubles in speed, et cetera, before you know it, it's going at the speed of light. So when I saw the immigration problem being talked about, or when my first awareness as a youngster, I said the same thing. If no one stops the flow, it's pure math.
And
it's
Napolitano
not a question
has
of
never.
It's a question of when.
Right. Napolitano, who I consider the worst, absolute worst governor the state of Arizona has ever had, she would do next to nothing for the state to stop the illegals. And then one of my friends is from, born in Mexico, and she's a naturalized citizen, and she's American first. She told me, she said one of her friends did a genealogy on Napolitano, and Janet Napolitano's grandmother, Senora Ferro, is Mexican. And her father, even though it's Italian name, Napolitano, he was born in Mexico. And she's got all these relatives that are Mexican. This is why she doesn't want to stop it. I personally think she's an Aztlaner. I think she wants to make this Mexico. But, Tony, let me just stop you for a minute. Do you want me to read from one of the books?
Yes, I only have a few minutes left. Great. Why don't you read, from which text are you going to be reading from the La Raza?
Well, this is called Borderlands, La Frontera by Gloria Anzaldúa. And this is a book that's in English, Latino perspectives, which substitutes English and it teaches the kids Latino literature. And I have actually read from it before, but I never got to read this part. There's just two little parts here. There's a poem, and to me, this is insightful language. When you teach kids to hate, you make somebody out so loathsome and so hateful that they can't help but hate them. This is a made-up poem. This is not real. This is made-up, and it's called We Call Them Greasers. And this is it's a white man talking, supposedly. Like I say, this is a made-up poem. I found them here when I came. They were growing corn in their small ranches, raising cattle, horses, smelling of wood smoke and sweat. They knew their betters. They took off their hats, placed them over their hearts, lowered their eyes in my presence. Weren't interested in bettering themselves. Why, they didn't even own the land, but they shared it. I guess they're sharecroppers. Wasn't hard to drive them off. Cowards they were, no backbone. I showed them a piece of paper with some writing. Told them they owed taxes, had to pay right away and be gone by mañana. By the time me and my men had waved that same piece of paper to all the families, it was all frayed at the ends. Some loaded their chickens, children, wives, and pigs into rickety wagons, pans and tools dangling, clanging from all sides. Couldn't take their cattle. During the night, my boys had frightened them off. Oh, there were a few troublemakers who claimed we were the intruders. Some even had land grants and appealed to the courts. It was a laughing stock, them not even knowing English. Still, some refused to budge, even after we burned them out. And the women, well, I remember one in particular. She lay under me whimpering. I plowed into her, kept thrusting and thrusting. Remember, these are for kids. These are for high school kids. Thrusting and thrusting, felt him watching from the mesquite tree, heard him kiss her boyfriend or her husband, heard him keening like a wild animal. In that instant, I felt such contempt for her round face and beady black eyes like an Indian's. Notice that he puts the Indians down, and the writer says she has beady black eyes like an Indian's. Afterwards, I sat on her face until her arm stopped flailing. In other words, he sat on her face until he killed her. Didn't want to waste a bullet on her. The boys wouldn't look at me in the eyes. I walked up to where I had tied her man to the tree and spat in his face. Lynch him, I told the boys. Now, can you make somebody out to be more loathsome or more hateful than the person she raised? This is a made-up story. She's making this up so the kids hate white people. And she makes Mexicans are always, they have the same themes. Mexicans are always the victims, and white men are always brutal and stole their land. And this is the same theme that runs in so many of their books. you know. So that's one thing. Then she has here, I wanted to tell you about the words. This is words for high school kids, but these are not words
right.
that you will find in most American books. She has Son of a Bee at page 124. At page 117, 118, and 170, she has the SH word. I don't want to say the words out loud. These are all curse words. At 72, 84, 129, 145, and 192, she has the F word. At page 194, she has a derogatory, they have derogatory terms for white people, men and women. This is for white women. Page 119, she's got two more dirty words. Page 117, she has dirty words for blacks. They have words that they call blacks that are the equivalent of nigger in Spanish. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's altogether, I mean, this is just a few pages that I looked at. These were 12 pages of dirty words. Why are we teaching
wow.
this to our kids in public schools?
So they can fit right in. So they can fit right in. When they come into town, they can fit right in.
These books should not be. And then at the end, she calls for, well, let me read you one more little part of a poem here. To live in the borderlands means the mill with the razor white teeth wants to shred off your olive red skin, crush out the kernel, your heart, pound you, pinch you, roll you out, smelling like white bread but dead. And at the very end, she calls for revolution, and she has another one here, another poem. I'll translate it into English. We shall return. We will take the war from well within. With that light of the soul on that awkward night, spirit will be reborn from our land. Let's arise, raza. Arise, wake up, my people. Let's liberate the pueblos. Arise, my people, wake up. You see, so it's all about liberation,
mm-hmm.
revolution. They have the dirty words in there. It puts